Welcome to the Curious Women Podcast. I'm your host, Meg Hager, and I'm here with my co-host, Kylie Fagnano, and we're chatting about women's health to teach you what you didn't know you didn't know.
We're here with Dion today. Meg,
hi.
We're in Hello. Three time zones, you guys. We're in Hawaii. Meg's in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. I'm in DC. Dion is coming to us from France, the south of France, right?
No, not the south. Oh, we're so the center. I know south sounds way more romantic than the center, but that's where I am.
I'm coming from central France.
There we go. The countryside. You can just say the French countryside.
Oh,
that sounds good.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
Right? So you see how that elevated it?
Yes.
You said like the Tennessee countryside. I don't know, maybe, but not quite the same.
The French countryside's got a very special ring. I like that. Very nice.
I love that. Oh my gosh.
Dion, wow. Tell us who you are. Who are you? Why are you here?
Well, I'm here because I know you and you invited me. So yes. Thank you for that, Kylie. I appreciate it. Okay. I'm Dion Detraz. I'm a cancer dietitian, an integrative and functional cancer dietitian. So I didn't start that way. I started in just kind of the regular, you know, registered dietitian hospital space. And eventually found my way towards integrative medicine, where I was trying to, you know, kind of integrate, there's the word again, but I really was trying to pull in these other strategies, even in the hospital, right? Like as I was learning things and I realized, of course, as we know now, because of your work too, that people really are eager for this, right? They want more than just the standard advice, the standard things that they've already done that aren't working. So anyways, I had an opportunity to work at the integrative medicine clinic at University of California, San Francisco. And that was kind of incredible because I really got to work within a team of integrative providers and actually see how medicine could look in Ooh. An ideal world.
That's really cool.
You know, we're really like everybody's coming together on patient care. It was incredible. Wow. And where I had full autonomy to do whatever I thought would be helpful for the patient instead of these like protocols I had to follow, right? Like in a typical hospital. It was incredible. And that was a couple of years before we decided to come to France. It was really my dream job. It was just that the timing wasn't awesome because we ended up leaving. But yeah, it was really special and it helped me see what could be possible. So then when we came to France 6 years ago, I started my online practice so I could keep working. And what did you want to say something?
No, I was going to ask a question, but keep going because
you
I
can.
Think you're going to get
okay.
there. Go ahead.
Okay. You might. Okay. So I started my online practice, The Rustic Dietitian. And at the time I was, you know, just really kind of doing general integrative anti-inflammatory sort of work. Right. And it was broad. There were some cancer patients for sure, but not specific. It was really broad, as I'm sure both of you are doing anti-inflammatory stuff, right? Like it kind of crosses.
Yeah.
All specialties.
Crosses over into so many things.
It crosses over all of it. I know. Mm-hmm. And that was great. I mean, obviously I really enjoyed that, but during this time, my father was diagnosed with cancer. And so I really kind of dove in to the world of cancer more deeply because of him, of course, where I was researching. You know, it's like you just take it to another level when either it happens to you or a family member.
Totally.
And I was through that experience, to make a long story short, I can certainly go into details if you guys want, but to make a long story short, through everything I learned in his path and his journey, that is also where my eyes became open to functional medicine, where I got to see the power of diving deeper into like what might potentially have caused his cancer. That would have never crossed my mind before. And after I saw all these pieces, then it just felt like obligatory. Like, I have to do this. I can't, like, now that I know this, I have to share this with everyone because it's just not being discussed.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like a level of like what you, once you know too much, you can't unknow it. And there's, right. you start moving in the world in a little bit of a different way. And it starts slowly yeah. at first. Is that how it was for you? And then all yeah. of a sudden you're like, oh, this is what my whole practice is. And this is what I'm doing in the world. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was it. Like basically for the last maybe 5 years now, I've just done cancer because that's what I've been, that's what the universe has told me to do is yes. really what yeah. it feels like, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
So amazing. So I feel like I have so many questions about nutrition and cancer. And yeah. I think in this episode, what we are going to do is we're going to dive into one pocket of things and the connection mm-hmm. between hormone and mm-hmm. and cancer and kind of get into some of those details. But I just wanted to say, because I think this is how I feel. And I think a lot of people probably feel this way too. When you hear the word cancer, I feel almost like scratchy is the word, because it feels like there's so much emotion and so much, so much to hold for people who are all having so many different experiences around one person's diagnosis, that it makes it feel challenging to understand how to navigate all of that with anything, let alone food and nutrition. And so before we dive in, I don't even know if there's a specific question in that, but when I'm saying that, what does that, do you feel that way? Do you see that in your clients? And what might you say to, I mean, this was your experience. You are a family member of somebody going through it. Now, thankfully you had the information and the knowledge, but most people don't. So if there was like one or two little things from a nutrition standpoint on a really broad scale, before we dive in, what might two or three of those things in terms of advice be? And they could be nutritionally or sort of emotionally or, did you get a question out of that?
Yeah, no, I did. But my brain is like, my brain is processing about like, what, how can I narrow it down to a couple of things, right? Like what would be the first things to do? I think that I find that what comes up again and again for me when I work with people is that I end up just holding space for like the trauma of what they're going through. Because the truth is, even though most cancers are actually treatable now, thankfully, like that's not so nearly great. As many people are dying from cancer as they used to, it immediately ignites fear of death. Like it's forcing you to face your mortality, even if it's early stage, it doesn't matter. It's like just hearing the word. Right.
Yes.
And it does the same for your family and your friends. Like everybody just kind of starts spiraling like, oh my God, what does this mean? Are you going to be alive next year? I mean, and so I find that, you know, the people that I end up connecting with, obviously they have a desire to do something more than just traditional treatment, which is why we're talking.
Right.
But the first step is just kind of holding space for them and being like, this is, and giving them permission to be like, this is traumatic on your psyche. Even if it's not in real life, it doesn't matter. Like it's how you're processing it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's even me holding space for family members, you know, for spouses or children often, or adult children, you know, it's just helping them understand that what they don't know, you know, helping them normalize and being like, I know you have no perspective here, but let me just explain like kind of what to expect and that it's not quite as scary as you think it's going to be. And just that alone can make a huge difference, right? I mean, just that can shift everything.
Yeah. That really highlights exactly what I was trying to put into words there with that lack of question is that so much of what you have to deal with in a moment with somebody has nothing to do with facts, nothing to do with any of the advice that you're about to try to teach them. Nothing. It's just like the humanity that kind of walks in the door with it. Right.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. Okay. Wow. Yeah, this topic is big. Okay.
It's huge. So wait, before we dive in, I've got a question.
Oh, Dion, yeah, this is going to be an important one.
Meg,
what are you drinking?
Oh yeah. I have a rooibos. How do you say that even?
I say a rooibos. Is that what is that,
do you say the I or do you not say the I?
I say the I. What do you rooibos. Say, Kylie?
I was hoping you weren't going to ask.
Okay, you don't have to say.
I say rooibos because I feel like that's what people around me say, but I also don't feel super confident of that. Somebody tell us how to pronounce that T. You all know which one we're talking about.
Yes, the one that's hard to pronounce. The one that starts with an R. So that's the tea I'm drinking.
Send us
delicious, but hard to pronounce.
Somebody send us an email. Let us know how to pronounce this tea.
A speech therapist who understands how to spell out like the pronunciations of things. That'd be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be great. If we have any speech therapists listening, Kylie, what are you drinking? I see you're using your special mug, your favorite.
I've got
mug.
my Ember mug that keeps this warm for the duration of our conversation. Pretty. It's just coffee. I just have coffee. I think there's some collagen left in here, but I've been refilling it. So I might've drank it all this point. That's all.
Nice. Yeah.
My fourth Very is not. Cool.
Nice.
Defend kind. Brian opened the door this morning and he handed it to me and he said, defend yourself.
Oh, that's so Brian, sweet. I love this.
Brian deserves an award. That's best.
Oh my God.
The
he's the best. He's the best. I mean, and the things you post about him on Instagram, like, come on. My husband would never be on board with those things.
They're
would
so
never
fun.
Do that for me.
It's definitely, it's a big part of who he is. Yes. Anyway, Meg, what do you got over there?
I am, once again, it was a bit of a rushed morning this morning. So we're doing some soy milk, some protein powder. We got some collagen in here. I mixed my ovacetol in there. Just my little like hold me over until I can have an actual meal.
Right. Because it's 8 o'clock in the morning for you.
And yeah, exactly.
Yeah. For say. You, Dion.
Right.
I know.
Yeah.
Right. What is ovacetol?
It's I've mentioned this on the show before where I'm somebody who needs a little bit of help just keeping my cycle regular. I just have a long history of hormonal issues. And so ovacetol is a myo-inositol supplement that helps with egg quality and it helps regulate your ovulation. So
nice.
Yeah.
Which awesome. I think might in some indirect way tie into our conversation today, right? Because we're going to talk a lot about hormone balance or imbalance, right? And its impacts and risks on cancer. And so Dion, give us just, before we go in with some more specific questions, tell us what it is that I didn't just say very clearly that we're going to be learning about today. And again, I feel a little like tiptoeing around the topic. I'm realizing it kind of as it's not coming out.
Yeah.
But go ahead and try to succinctly say what I just did.
Yeah. You know what though, Kylie, I think it's really common for people to have discomfort around this. And even as providers, what I've noticed is in my, like with my colleagues who also work with people with cancer, a lot of them tiptoe around even what they're willing to say, what they're willing to support people with. There's a lot of discomfort around it. I think maybe there's a lot of fear of false promises or false hope. I'm not sure, like I'm totally reading into that, but I just had this conversation with another woman today where I feel like I really don't shy away from it because I've seen, I mean, just in the last 5 years, I've seen an amazing difference focusing on diet and lifestyle and different strategies like fasting and supplements can like completely transform a person's journey. So for me, I'm like, it's a disservice to not share. Yeah. I'm not saying it's going to cure you. Nobody knows that. But what I'm saying is there's a lot you can do to support your healing. And if we're just focused on supporting healing, that it's endless, right? No matter how advanced, no matter how aggressive, it's like, there is always something we can do. And what I think with the hormonal piece, what's really important is that when you get to the other side of cancer, and now you're just looking towards like long-term health and prevention, not going through this again, you're given very little guidance of what to do. When you have that final appointment with your oncologist, you're basically said you're clear. We'll see you in 3 months for your next scan or 6 months for your next scan. That's it. And so then people leave in this sort of place, like, now what?
Right.
Like, now I just watch and wait and hope. And every time a scan comes, I have total anxiety about, like, is it back? Or, and sometimes that phase, that stage of the journey can be harder than even just like going through treatment.
Oh, right? I can imagine.
There's so much. Yeah. There's so much unknown and fear and anxiety. And particularly if you feel like you were already doing a bunch of things right. And then you got cancer and you're like, well, now what? What else like am just I that, supposed to do?
That blindsided feeling, right? Or that slap in the face kind of like a.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a lot of my clients. That's a lot of them.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I imagine I would feel. Yeah. And I think, for if you're a typically, I mean, I know quite a, I think everybody knows somebody, right? And the people that I'm picturing are like, they're not doing like ruthlessly unhealthy lifestyle sorts of things. I don't really think that's the case for most people. So I loved that perspective shift that you offered there, is just focusing on healing. Even just you saying those words makes me feel a little more at ease, because it's not beating cancer then. It's focusing on this other thing and kind of really takes your attention away from the thing you're trying to get rid of. So that must feel, I mean, that feels for somebody who's not going through it feels softer.
Yeah. Right. I felt that shift
more
too.
Positive. It's more positive and optimistic, right? It's saying like, let's focus on the things we can control that can help you. And, you know, and we'll just keep adjusting as we go, depending on how you're doing and how you're feeling. And I think that, at least in my experience, it feels like people really resonate with that, because it does give them a space of like calm and like, okay, I'm being held. I know there's options. I don't have to like worry in the moment about like what's going to happen a month from now. You know, like you can just kind of be present and be focused on what you can control.
There's something about the idea of healing too, that it just, the word, it sounds more familiar and almost like something you can connect to, that you want to connect to.
Sure. Absolutely.
So speaking of, Kylie, you made a great point about tying in the hormonal piece of cancer. And that's something that I'm really curious about. So can you tell us, what hormones are we talking about? Is it one? Is it five? Like, what are we, what kinds, what hormones are we looking at when we're talking about the connection to cancer?
Well, I mean, I think that's a fair question. I think for the majority of cancers, we're talking about the sex hormones. So we're talking about estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, driving a lot of the, you know, hormonally related cancers like breast cancer, prostate cancer, right? Ovarian, uterine, endometrial, like some of the more common cancers really that people, women primarily, but prostate, like that people get. And there's definitely, there's definitely a connection with hormones and what, so, you know, from that functional medicine perspective, right? And you guys can relate to that. It's like, can we dive deeper to figure out why? Why do these cancer cells have a sensitivity to hormones? Like, what is that about? And why did that happen? Instead of just, you know, the standard, like, the standard cancer prevention guidelines, I'm not going to drop any like names, the standard prevention guidelines, you know, the only hormonal related thing they say is for mothers to breastfeed your babies if you can. Like, that's it. Like, there's no other prevention strategies related to hormones. Hormonally driven cancers are like huge. I mean, hormone positive breast cancer is like, you know, one of the more common female cancers. So
Dion, what does that mean when you, I just have to interrupt you because I don't feel clear. When you say hormone sensitive or hormone driven, positively or negative. So like, can somebody have breast cancer that's not hormone positive? Explain that a little bit.
So typically when someone's diagnosed with cancer, they will do a bunch of kind of staging and pathology to try to understand the actual cancer cells more. Because the more we, and this is really like the advance of modern medicine, right? It's like the more we understand the specific genetic mutations or how it's, you know, what the things it's presenting on its cell membranes, the more we can be targeted with therapy. I mean, the medicine world, right? Mm-hmm. Can be targeted with therapy. So when I say something is hormone sensitive, it's mean like they've actually done that testing and they've determined that estrogen, like these cells have receptors for estrogen, or they have receptors for progesterone or testosterone. And what that means is if they're presenting receptors, then when they bind, that hormone is telling that cell to grow.
You guys. Yeah. Okay. So the connection
stimulating
here,
growth.
Okay. The connection being that if this cancer cell has a place for sex hormones, in this case, to land, the message that gets sent when they land there is grow.
Is grow. And
that's why there's such this interesting connection between. Okay.
Especially with estrogen, right? Because estrogen is like a very like growing hormone. Like that's the, in a positive way, right? For most parts of our body, that's very positive. It's promoting growth. But when that's happening to a cancer cell, not so positive, right? Like, and this is why one of the main treatments for, again, just using hormone positive breast cancer as an example, is they suppress hormones, right? They take medication to stop estrogen production or to block estrogen production to help decrease the chance of a recurrence.
Oh God, and this connection is huge. Yeah. I didn't know any of this.
How do you know if you, how do you know if you have hormone positive cancer? Will they tell you that if you're diagnosed? Yes. Is that like a common part?
Yeah. Okay. So when they, before treatment starts, they always do these like staging tests to really try to understand the pathology, because then they can be more targeted with treatment. So again, with breast cancer, as an example, I mean, about 70% of all breast cancers are estrogen positive, right? So most breast cancers do have this like hormone drive, but there are also many that are known as, they call them triple negative, which just means like they have none of the receptors, like negative for receptors of stimulus. And actually that can be harder to treat. If we know that there's a hormone sensitivity, then they have targeted treatments that can block the hormones. So in some ways that can be more effective treatment. But yeah, does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think, sorry, Kylie, go ahead.
No, you go.
I actually just wanted to know, for the small portion, it sounds like, of cancers that are not hormone sensitive, like so what happens then? And maybe this is a conversation for later in the episode when we get there. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the case, that's fine. But I'm just curious, you've explained the mechanism behind hormone sensitive cancers, but then what about cancers that are not driven by those cells that have the receptors for hormones?
Yeah. Well, there's other things that drive growth in the body. And probably the next biggest thing that drives growth is insulin. Ooh. And so cancer cells present the same way they would present a hormone, like an estrogen receptor site. They can present insulin receptor sites. They can present glucose receptor sites, right? They can present sites that basically fuel them. And the more of those like little receptors they have on their membranes, the more that thing, whatever that thing is going to like drive its growth. And this is why blood sugar balance is such an important piece too, which again is not like part of standard cancer prevention guidelines.
Right.
But like, if you just understand how the physiology of cancer works, for me, it's like, I mean, this is kind of a no-brainer. Like, we don't want to have really high levels of insulin and sugar and hormones like roaming through our blood. Like, this is not going to be helpful.
This is where that messaging that so many, I do think that, at least in my experience, I've heard a lot of people go into this very strict, like, absolutely no sugar, I'll starve the cancer type of mentality.
Right. And that's where it comes from. Yeah.
Yes. So I guess there is some validity to that. It just has to, it's not quite what we're saying, I don't think. But also, you're not wrong.
But it's stemming,
for being concerned.
Right? It's stemming from a place of physiology that, like, yes, if we can help in various ways, if we can help cut off the fuel, like what's driving growth, then obviously we have a better chance at getting rid of the cancer.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know. I'm not sure which question I want to go to next.
Just go for one. What's the one that's like the most want, like feels the most urgent to you?
What do you do with people? Mm-hmm. Let's stick for now anyway to hormone positive mm-hmm. cancer. So we're just to connect the hormone. So when you're working with people, are you seeing like, you know what, if we can help you, if we could have helped you manage your hormones, in this case, it sounds like particularly estrogen, right?
Yeah.
Better. Would they have perhaps had a lower chance of getting cancer? Mm-hmm. And on the other side, once they're already, right, I'm not sure which angle to look at this. Yeah. Is there a way to prevent by managing estrogen levels? One mm-hmm. question. And then mm-hmm. say you're already diagnosed, it is mm-hmm. Positive how would you feel that?
For like hormone positive or hormone sensitive.
Hormone positives. Yeah. Okay. Say that's the case. On the other side, can you help heal? Can you mm-hmm. help in healing by then managing estrogen levels and mm-hmm. hormone levels? So is there an angle from both sides of the
coin? Absolutely.
Is one better? Yeah. And what
the answer is yes. Excited. Yeah, the answer is yes and yes.
Okay, great.
I'm right? So excited. That was
17 questions in one really lengthy. So
it's all yes.
Okay.
And, I mean, I think so let's start with someone who doesn't have cancer, because I think that, and perhaps for many of your listeners, this is going to be more relevant, is that there are a lot of people, women, going around with estrogen excess in their body.
Yeah. We talked about that in our last episode,
right?
Too.
Okay. Yep. Perfect. Yeah.
Tell and us there are many
signs.
Like.
There's many signs of estrogen excess, right? And you guys can probably help me come up with this list too. I mean, certainly, more PMS or just kind of swelling and tenderness in your breasts, particularly around, your cycle. It could also be irregular periods. It could also be a lot of anxiety, panic attacks. So there's like mental pieces, like mood pieces that go along with high estrogen. Could be trouble sleeping, could be hair loss, it could be weight gain. I mean, it's a lot of things. Could be bloating, could be, right? Mood swings, all kinds of things.
I have a client who also gets night sweats is like her typical sign. And then I see this a lot in my practice because I work with acne clients, and there's a lot of clients who have acne because of estrogen excess. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if you see that in your practice, but that's something that I don't know if there's research on that. It's just what I've found in anecdotally my practice.
But I mean, it could also be having something like endometriosis,
right?
Or having fibrocystic breasts. It's like some of those could be early sign. Well, early, not super early, but like like an early diagnosis that would be like, ooh, we need to nip this in the bud, because that could progress to something like cancer. Right.
Yeah.
So I think and of course we could do functional testing. So if you are working with someone, you could run a Dutch lab, like you could see like, what are your hormone levels? How much estrogen do you have? Right. Like, how are you detoxifying it? We can actually discover this, but not in Western medicine models. Like we're not testing for that. So unfortunately,
right.
It forces you to go outside of the norm, but we can. So I think that's probably the biggest take-home point, is that a lot of women are having excess estrogen in their body, and it's not cancer, and hopefully it won't become cancer, but like that is a big risk factor,
right?
So if that's happening, we need to take steps to change that.
Right. So what I heard just now is that it's not a lot. The thing, or the point I think to also be clear on, I think, is that a lot of these signs and symptoms that we just mentioned are also very, it's kind of like if you go to the ER with abdominal pain, they're just kind of like, it could be anything.
So many,
things. So I don't want our listeners to sit there and be checking off the boxes and be like, oh my God, I think what you're saying is it's worth maybe using some of the tools and the guidelines that we're going to talk about in this episode, maybe looking further into working with a practitioner who can help them check their hormones, see what's going on. So we're not saying you have cancer. We're just saying it could be a risk factor. And these are some of the things to look for if you might be worried about that, right?
And
did I get all that?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And what we can talk about next, if you'd like, I think that what I would consider the pillars of just sort of diet lifestyle that we can do to help decrease estrogen in our body,
hit me.
Is going to be relevant for all of us.
Okay.
Right. And then what I would say is if you're doing all those things and you still have some of those symptoms and breast cancer runs in your family, like go do a Dutch test, like dive deeper. Like let's make sure that that's not your trajectory, you know, but you're right. It's complicated. It's not just estrogen that causes cancer.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? There's lots of layers involved here. So
I just wanted to ask quickly too, in general, because this will apply cancer or not for folks, excess estrogen is never the goal, right? Like we're never happier with an excess of estrogen in our bodies, correct?
Any like hormones,
an excess of anything, right?
Problem,
right. You guys, we're really focusing on estrogen right now for the sake of like keeping a
for the example
going.
But I think like any hormone, right? We want it to be within a range.
And then I also just wanted to have you explain what the Dutch test is, because it's common to us because we're familiar with that, but will you just explain to people what that is and how they might be able to have access to it? Because it's unfortunately not one of those things you're going to go to your regular doc and say, hey, run, they won't know. And you're not going to take your results to them either because they also haven't been trained.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I'm not saying there's anything wrong. It's just not the angle. Right. So tell us a little bit about the Dutch test.
Yeah. And unfortunately too, many of my clients have taken the result or not even taken the results, but just like email their oncologists, their doctors and being like, I thought you might be interested to know. And they're like, I don't want to hear about that. Like, we don't use that test.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So yeah. So unfortunately there's not always going to be a lot of integration there. This tool is helpful. Unfortunately, I know. So the Dutch test is actually a dried urine test. Unlike many, traditionally many hormone tests are either blood or saliva. And I know Dutch offers like several different kinds, but the one I typically use is just the complete. So it's just the urine. And it's really looking at it's a comprehensive panel of hormones. So it's giving us a sense of your different sex hormones. So the amounts, it's looking at the metabolites in your urine, which is kind of how it's measuring amounts over the course of a day, I believe it is, right? So it's like collecting over a period of time. And it's looking at estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. And then what I think is super helpful in like from the cancer framework is that then it's looking at different metabolites of estrogen. It's looking at how you detoxify estrogen, and detoxifying your hormones is as important as like how high your hormones are.
Wow.
Right? Because if you're not detoxifying them well, you might have normal hormone levels, but it's like getting built up in your body. Right. So I really like that panel because it can show us many different things. Plus it can look at your adrenal hormones, which again, from like a cancer perspective is interesting to me because some of those can be through the aromatase enzyme, they can be converted into estrogen. So if those are super high, like we have to be mindful that some of those could be moving into estrogen, even though that's not what they were intended for. And it's also looking at your adrenal, but your melatonin, your cortisol, and some of those, a few organic acids, right? A few little tidbits there. And one other cancer specific one that's very interesting is it's measuring, I think I'm going to forget the name of it. It's 8-OHDG, maybe. I forget. It's a metabolite of one of the pathways that's looking at your risk for DNA mutation. Which is also super interesting for, you know, from this perspective. You could use the Dutch panel for all kinds of different reasons, right? But for my approach, like those are the things I'm interested in.
So you guys, this is something that right off the bat, if you're listening and so far you're thinking like, I've got a family history, I feel these symptoms, I've been concerned and sort of thinking about this, it's been on my radar anyway, go and do this test. You're gonna search for either a functional doctor, functional dietitian, and a naturopath would do these. Some acupuncturists I know will do them.
I think they can actually go to the Dutch site and find a provider that does it, I believe.
Oh my God. Okay.
I think
even better.
Yeah, perfect. I think so. It's DutchTest.com, I'm pretty sure. Why do that when we've got Dion here?
Yeah, right. Well, no, yes,
the
end, exactly.
Then you can go do that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So then the pillars. I'm curious to hear what these are. So these are kind of like the go-to things that anybody can do to help with the prevention side or the healing side.
Yeah, both. Both. I use them for both.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, we have to think about why your estrogen might be high, right? Like sometimes it's because your body is producing a lot of estrogen. Usually that's not why. Usually it's because you're not detoxifying your estrogen well, and it's getting backed up, or you're being exposed to it in your environment with xenoestrogens, right? Which are basically chemicals in our environment that mimic estrogen, and they bind to those receptors and they stimulate growth the same way normal estrogen would. And I personally believe with like the rise of breast cancer in the last 10, 20 years, I really believe it has more to do with that than probably anything else.
Makes a ton of sense.
Right? Because the degree that we're exposed to these hormone disrupting chemicals is pervasive.
Yes.
I mean, it's in everything, right? It's in plastics, it's in body care products, it's in our kitchen pans, it's in nail polish. I mean, it's in so many things that you could be getting exposed to it on a daily basis. So usually the first conversation is just that. Like, let's think about where you might be getting this estrogen from and what can we do to start decreasing that?
Yeah.
What does that conversation often look like? Like, what are the things that you tell people? Like plastics, that seems like a no-brainer, right? Like take out the plastic water bottles, the plastics, Tupperware stuff.
Yeah. Heating your food. Yeah. Don't put plastic Tupperware in the microwave to reheat and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely about like, let's start trading things out into glass or stainless steel, you know, or ceramic. Mm. It's also about anything bleached is going to have dioxin in it, which can also alter hormones.
Bleached
paper products like toilet paper, coffee filters, tampons, menstrual pads. Wow. I mean, right? Yes. Even hand sanitizer has those dioxins, which like post-COVID, I mean, we've all been probably overdoing the sanitizers.
Yeah.
Maybe not us, but lots of people.
Not me.
we'll just say many people in general.
Yeah. Many people in general.
Of sanitizers.
And there's a lot of people who work in like healthcare fields.
Right. And they have to.
Sanitize before and after you go in the room. We all know that, right?
Yeah.
It's not unavoidable.
Yes.
So, you know, that piece matters. You can't do a ton about that. So, okay.
It also can be parabens, which is like in shampoo and conditioners and sunscreen. So usually what I do, and I have a bunch of posts on my website too, that talk about this, but typically when I meet with people, it's like, I give them a list.
Yeah.
Right. And I say, these are the things that are going to be most concerning. I want you to start thinking about like, which of these are true for you? And are any like low hanging fruit that would be easy to trade out right now versus things that maybe over time, the game plan is like, when it's time to replace something, you're going to get something different, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So your website is groundandroot.com. Right?
Yes.
So that's where
that's a whole new conversation because I just rebranded.
Oh, that's great.
So that's my brand new one.
We'll definitely get to that. I want to hear a lot about that. I just wanted to put it in there so that, because you were mentioning there's some posts on the website that people can read about the EDCs and stuff. So that's where you guys can go and see all her new branding and an amazing website, but also the stuff about the endocrine disrupting chemicals too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really, I mean, for me, that's step one, right? Yeah, because no matter how much we support all the rest, if it's still just like flowing in, it's like, we're never going to really make a change.
Yeah.
And you know what? Sometimes that is a starting point for people is so much more manageable because then I know the food is coming up here. And as soon as you start talking about taking away, adding in, it's so emotional around food for everything, right? Cancer or not. It's so emotional. We always know that we feel that way. Even a healthy person who's not trying to do something feels that way. So this, you guys, could be a great spot. Take a look. What are the ingredients in the things that you're putting on your hair, on your skin, in your body? You guys, I feel like to me, the tampon thing feels like you know you're going to use it or you know you need to use something on a regular basis. So make that something, even if there's a learning curve to choosing something new, right? Like maybe that's a good starting point. I don't know. Yeah.
Feel that way, or it sounds like what you're saying is like identify the points of most contact. So like cooking, like cookware and drinkware, I would imagine would be a really good place to start. So for anyone, if you're listening to us and being like feeling so overwhelmed, because I have this conversation a lot with my clients too. And the first question I get is, how the F do I do that? What in the world? You're telling me I have to give up all these things and I'm always on the defense from these EDCs that are like floating around in the air or whatever, you know? So it's like, just look, identify what your points of most contact are. And the easy things like cookware, drinkware, makeup even is another one. There's a ton of parabens and makeup and stuff. So it's not saying you can't ever do any of these things, but just try to minimize your contact, I think is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And also I would say another thing I often teach to my clients too, is that our bodies can handle some toxins, right? It's not like it has to be all or nothing. We have these amazing detoxification systems naturally working in our bodies that can actually handle some of this. The problem is it becomes too much, right? So it's like, I always have people think of it as like a bucket. How many toxins are coming in? How well is it coming out? Mm-hmm. And if it starts to build up and overflow, there's a problem. So it doesn't have to be perfect for it to work, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like, can we lower the load while we support better detox? And you'll get the result you want, right? It's not black and white. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
I know, because I do have a few clients too, even like post-cancer, who they've changed, you know, a bajillion things because of our work together. But then they're like, well, I have to keep dyeing my hair. I'm not going to change that. And I was like, I hear you, you know, or I'm going to go get my nails done. Yeah. I get it. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think it's just to know that it doesn't have to be perfect. Yeah. You just have to make a dent.
Okay. Awesome.
I did that for a little while when I was like, natural deodorants, you guys.
I mean, work as well.
It's not true. All created equal. Not all They're created not. Equal. And some just suck. Most of them. For me anyway. And so for a long time, I was just like, I don't care if this has blue dye in it. Like, I just can't do it. Okay. You know? So I love that reminder, both personally and everybody else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Well, so then the next step would be to, how do we optimize detoxification, right? Like, so how do we help our bodies deal with whatever is coming in, whether that's xeno, like fake estrogens, or just your actual natural estrogen? And your liver is incredibly important for metabolizing and regulating your hormone levels, right? So if the liver is not up to speed, if it's not functioning well, you're going to get this kind of backup and this buildup, so to speak, of estrogen or other hormones too. But we're sort of using this as an example. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different ways we can support our liver. And I'm sure you guys talk about this all the time with your clients, I would imagine, right?
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, it's such an important organ for so many different reasons. Hormones just being one of them. So usually we have to have a conversation about alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I also think this is, you know, when we, again, with breast cancer, when we think about that connection between alcohol and breast cancer, which is like kind of talked about in Western, you know, it's like we know there's an increased risk, but it's not really explained why. It's not really like, and we know that alcohol is a carcinogen on its own. So yes, it can kind of increase any cancer risk. But why does it seem to be more closely tied to breast cancer? What's that about? And for me, what I believe is that when the liver has to detoxify alcohol, alcohol takes precedence over everything else, right? Yeah. So while it's busy detoxifying alcohol, what's happening to your hormones? They're just hanging out. They're on the loose.
Yeah,
exactly. And I believe that's really more of that association, that relationship. It's like, because the alcohol is sort of interfering with the liver's ability to detoxify the hormones.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. Something we have to be mindful.
Feels very mind blowing to me. Yeah. Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's so simple. And I think alcohol in our society is just like a normal part of most people's evenings. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong necessarily, but it's definitely not, this perspective is not talked about actually. Not very often at all. And I mean, how many of you listening have a glass of wine with dinner and call it like it's red wine and it's heart healthy, because parts of that can also be true. So I think really, I just think that that's an interesting opportunity for somebody to kind of like grasp onto and take a healthy look at what is my habit right now that I maybe haven't really questioned for a while. Am I concerned? Do I move that to the top of the priority list? Right.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Okay. Yeah. Keep going.
And that's, I would say too, just to piggyback on that, because I'm sure you can imagine that some of, not all, but some of my clients had a healthy alcohol intake, usually wine with dinner. I mean, it wasn't like they're going to the bar, but you know, and that feels like a big shift for them, even though, so what typically happens is when they get the diagnosis, it's like, it all just stops because they're freaked out, of course. You know, but then what happens post, there's a little bit less like, can I ever drink this again? Like, what do I do going forward? Is it safe? Is it not? And there's a lot of confusion there because it's not talked about, right? So then there's not really clear guidelines of what people should do. And this is again, where that Dutch test, just as an example, and there are other tests too, where you can check detox pathways. But if we know how well your liver is functioning, that also gives us some feedback as to like, can you drink alcohol or not? Like, is that safe for you to do? Right. So that's another reason those tests can be helpful.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, wow. I'm so excited. Keep going. What else?
Okay, good.
Can you touch on some of the food, nutrition, lifestyle stuff that will help with this detoxification? Guys, we're still on pillar two, okay? Pillar two.
Right, okay, I know. There's only four. And the other, so it's okay.
This is so important though. Like this is the action. And this is why I'm asking so many questions, because my hope is that people are going to be able to take a piece here, a piece there, and actually do something with it. Because that is the fucking point of what we're trying to offer here is stuff for you to be able to ID in your life that you can find manageable to like go out in the world and do. So detoxification is important, because if your estrogen levels are not detoxified properly, even if they are being produced normally and you're not being overexposed, which you are, then you can't detoxify them. So they become higher. In what way can we help get rid of these in a good, healthy, natural way?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of liver loving foods, right? Like foods that are going to help boost those detox pathways. So things like cruciferous vegetables, like that whole family is going to be great for the liver.
All your dark
leafy greens, right, are going to be great for the liver. Mm-hmm. All of your alliums, so your garlic, your onions, your leeks, the liver loves that. It helps with those detox pathways. Even things like citrus and berries, walnuts, green apples. I mean, there's a lot of foods in there that aren't horrible, right? That could actually be really good for the liver. It kind of helps it, nourishes it, and helps it do its job. We can also bring in things like milk thistle, right? Maybe as a tea, which also just kind of helps the liver detoxify and boost glutathione and all the rest. Even something as simple as like keeping your hydration up. I mean, that can make a big difference in helping your whole body detoxify, right? But including your liver, sweating, getting a good sweat on, doing some fasting too, even just like the overnight fast can be really helpful at helping your body detox. Our liver regenerates during the night. So if you're eating really late and you're going to bed late, there's this really beautiful wheel from it's East Asian medicine. So kind of traditional Chinese medicine. They put all the organs on a circadian rhythm. And so over the course of 24 hours, it's amazing. Wow. Over the course of 24 hours, you see like which time periods like are focused on certain organs. And that's the time of day when those organs are most active and doing like their thing. And that's so cool. The gallbladder and the liver are during the night from like midnight to 2 or 3 a.m. or even maybe earlier, maybe like 11 p.m. I'd have to look at the wheel to like 1, 2 a.m. And so if you think about it, if you're eating really late into the night, if you're staying up late, your body's digesting or awake, you're going to miss out on that whole window of detoxification. Right?
Oh my God.
So even something as simple as like, let's eat dinner earlier and make sure you're in bed by 11 could also help the liver do its job better.
And I imagine just getting good quality sleep.
Yes, too. For sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, Kylie, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say this takes a much different approach to like not eating late at night rather like here's a much more a much healthier perspective than this just like I'm not going to eat after 6 o'clock because I'm going to lose weight, you know, like
sure
but also so yeah. I wanted to say that because I know a lot of people are going to hear that and think I knew I shouldn't be eating after a certain time. It's not the same. It's not the same. You're not to starve yourself. That's not helpful either. To summarize so far, we have a bucket, so to speak, that's being filled with estrogen. Some of it is good and healthy and necessary that our body is producing. A lot of it is coming from outside sources, mimicking estrogen, binding to the same receptors, and therefore impacting the body in the same way. So first pillar is getting rid of all of the excess. Second pillar is making sure that what we are making and getting is being detoxified, which in case you all didn't realize by this point has to happen. So our hormones get detoxified out of the body through the liver. And so that second pillar is supporting the natural process of detoxification. Yeah. Will you clarify for us, is there benefit, I'm going to ask this very loosely, to doing these detoxes that people will find on like a Pinterest page, or they'll do this like kind of intense, very specific, very strangely specific detox under the idea of I need to reset and detox. Like tell people about this.
Tell them about this.
Tell
well,
us the
I
truth.
Think, yeah, I know. I mean, it's tricky actually, because I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think it can be helpful to do periods of what I would consider more like detox support, you know, where you're sort of being more mindful, because the truth is like day in and day out, it's not always going to be perfect and it's not always going to look the same. So there could be periods of time where you do feel like you need a week off or a little reset or something like that. What I do with my clients is usually once a season. So kind of right after the seasonal change, we do a week where we do some kind of base. It's usually a plant-based, you know, kind of cleansing diet with maybe some extra fasting involved to really help support those pathways. So it's not going to be a really specific crazy plan. There's not going to be a ton of supplements or juicing per se. But it's just like, can we bring in, you know, more colorful plants and like ramp up the fiber? Can we get rid of the sugar and the alcohol and the caffeine and the things for a week, right? Can we do lots of hydration and get the good overnight fast? And it's kind of like the stuff that would be ideal all the time, but is not realistic all the time. So we take these little breaks.
And what I'm not hearing is that you're doing a 14-day celery juice.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Like, In fact, that is really eliminating all of the really supportive features in what we need from our food in order to detox properly, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so that's true. That's what you want to hear. It's actually what you're saying is more about what are you including in a really focused way during this period of time, rather than taking all of those things out. Right. So I just wanted to clear that up for people, because a detox
it's kind of a loaded term.
It is. And it's got many different meanings. And I wanted to take a minute to just kind of really clarify for you guys, your body knows how to do this if you support it in the right ways. And that's what this part of the conversation is about. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So now that we have gotten rid of excess, we've supported the ways in which to detoxify the appropriate amounts, what's the next thing?
I know you're going to love the next one, Kylie. It's right up your alley because it has to do with the microbiome. And so, I mean, as I'm sure you talk about all the time with your clients, like there's so many functions of our gut and our microbiome. It's involved in so many different things. And estrogen metabolism is one of those things. There is actually a certain category of bacteria, right? Known as the estroblome, which produce an enzyme that help us metabolize estrogen and help us detoxify xenoestrogens.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Which is amazing. Wow. The problem though, is a lot of us are living with a dysbiotic gut, right? So we may not have enough of those good ones, more of the opportunistic or pathogenic ones, which can actually do the opposite. So pathogenic bacteria can produce an enzyme known as beta-glucuronidase that blocks that process, right? And that is something else we can test for on the Dutch test. Right? So paying attention to your gut health actually matters here too, as if it didn't
shocking, matter. Right? Else, right? Shocking. I know. Exactly. And beta-glucuronidase, you guys, that for those of you who are thinking about stool testing or have done those, you can go back and check your test results for that. That's something that's also tested regularly on kind of integrative stool testing. Okay, so that's a clue. So can you say a little bit more about some of the tell us the name of the bacteria that tend to help
metabolize? Yeah, they're called estroblome. It's like a category of bacteria. And I don't know if there's really a way to test for that. Nothing that I've come across so far. But I think the idea is that we know that it's a helpful category of bacteria. We know that in an ideally functioning system, there's like, I don't know, hundreds or thousands of helpful bacteria. I have no idea, like way more than we can actually test for or take probiotics for, right?
I think, yes.
Like
yes.
It's vast.
Yes.
It's vast. Yes. And we all know too, that the more diverse, the more varied, the better. So I think like, even if you don't know the specific, you know, ratios of what's going on, I think as long as you're taking steps to, you know, optimize your gut health, to bring in good bacteria, to bring in lots of fiber, to help feed those bacteria, all the things that I'm sure Kylie teaches, then you're going to be on your way to making sure that the estroblome is intact.
That answers the question I don't need to ask. That's exactly. Okay. So you guys, this is not about searching for a probiotic for this. That's not a thing.
It doesn't exist. I haven't seen that. So
there are so many beneficial bacteria that we do not have in probiotic form. And I think this is the important part of what you're saying. Like once that stuff is gone, it's gone. You can't just rebuild it that by taking a probiotic. It doesn't work that way. So the way in which you help either preserve and then grow and help foster abundance in these different bacteria. And what you're saying, Dion, is that you don't have to know exactly which ones they are.
No, I mean, you can't.
You cast a broad net. You can't know. And you do that by what? Eating good amounts of fiber, right? Which is.
Yeah, right. And probiotic rich foods too, right? Which have more diverse cultures typically than what you're getting in a probiotic. Eating lots of colorful, right? Kind of the polyphenols, like all those things, that even mushrooms, like there's a variety of foods that kind of help encourage growth, create an environment where it's really friendly to these bacteria. And that's essentially what we're trying to do.
That is a really great way of saying it. It is creating an environment in which the good bacteria have an opportunity to thrive.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And that trumps taking a probiotic, you guys, because it just doesn't work the same way. It doesn't work the same way. And if you'll notice, a lot of the foods that we were talking about that you were mentioning in terms of supporting
for the liver.
Detoxification, yes, for the liver, they fall into this category too. So
for sure.
You're not like doubling up necessarily. No. You're doing one thing that's doing all of the things.
Mm-hmm. Right? Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So now that we've unsurprisingly brought the gut into this conversation.
I know. I knew you'd love it though.
I did love it.
She's going to love pillar three.
That's for me. All right. And then what's this fourth and final pillar?
Final one. Well, the final one is interesting because it's really, I've kind of just clumped it into other hormone balancing foods that I think are, that show the most kind of protection and help for keeping estrogen down and also keeping our hormones balanced. So we know that healthy fats, right, are very important for hormone production. So when people are following really low fat diets, they're kind of paving the way for hormonal imbalance.
Oh,
now,
boy.
Obviously we want to choose good, healthy fats, but we need to not be fat phobic if we're trying to, you know, nourish our hormones. So that would be first.
Yeah.
Then actually we go back to those cruciferous vegetables again. I mean, they're such a powerhouse category of food, right? I mean, there's so many good things about them, but specifically with estrogen, they have something known as indole 3 carbinol, which can inhibit the formation of harmful estrogen metabolites. So it literally can block that conversion into a more sort of destructive, stimulating estrogen. But there's a kicker, which you're also going to appreciate because it comes back to the gut. The kicker is that in order for it to be converted into its active form, can you guess what I'm going to say, what it might need?
What does that need? Tell us.
It needs stomach acid. So if you're producing enough stomach acid, if you're taking antacids, you're going to block this process. And you're not going to get that benefit from all the broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts that you're eating.
Okay. Can you recap that from start to finish one more time? Mm-hmm. So what is it that you need stomach acid for, and what does it do, and why is that? But just go through that one more
Okay.
time.
So cruciferous vegetables, first off, have a ton of benefits.
Tell us what those are.
Just one. Okay. That would fall into, so broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, kale, right? Like this kind of family of cruciferous vegetables, any of them will provide this benefit, plus many other benefits too. But this specific one, it contains a compound, which some people actually end up supplementing with to make sure they have enough of it coming in. But it's indole 3 carbinol that gets activated in the stomach. And actually, once it gets activated, it turns into something called DIM.
Yes.
May or may not be familiar with.
That's a huge supplement people take.
Yeah. And DIM is the compound responsible for inhibiting the harmful estrogen metabolites. Yeah. So we need, again, it's back to our gut. Like if we're not digesting well, if we don't have a healthy microbiome, if we don't have good stomach acid production, like we're not going to get all these benefits, even though we're trying to do the right stuff, you know?
Yeah. And I know there's so many of you who are going to be listening to this thinking, oh my God, I've been on a PPI or some sort of acid blocking medication for so long. Now what?
Thing at a time. You have to let go of the past, right? I mean, it just is what it is.
You have to let go of it, and you have to take the steps forward one at a time. So if that's your starting point, perfect. If it's something else, that's really, really, really great too. But don't let that be the like overwhelming thing for you. No. Let it be something that you take though. Let it be information that you hold now and take seriously.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, again, the way I present this typically is that these are all things you can do to support your healing, to support healthy hormones. It doesn't mean you have to do everything.
Yes.
You do what you can do, right? You add in things as you're able, but even if you added just one of those things, that is going to help you have a more healthy balance of hormones.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So can I go back and ask a question about the healthy fats?
Yes.
Do you see, there's this generation of folks who unfortunately grew up in this low fat
Yes.
fad that seems to last for decades, right?
Decades. It's lasted decades.
It's crazy. And they will not even use olive oil. Like they're really, and they really are afraid of doing something wrong. So it's sad for me to see, because they're making a very specific conscious choice,
mm-hmm.
thinking that they're doing something so good for themselves, because at a certain point that was the message being sent. Fat makes you fat. And we know now, obviously, that's outdated information. The research does not support that. I'm not sure the research ever supported it, but yet here we are, right? And so it's really, for those of you who are listening that fall into that category, I'm begging you to please let go of that information. You're not holding on to anything that's serving you. It's not help. I mean, and for so many reasons outside of just cancer prevention, it's so many things, like inflammation in general, just huge.
Yes.
But will you tell us some of the top sort of, healthy fats is another thing that is like a buzzword that people don't even really know.
It's a bit ambiguous, maybe.
It's a bit ambiguous. Yeah. So tell us, what does that mean? And what foods can we find them that might be easy for people to start slowly, gently adding in so that they don't feel overwhelmed?
Right. Well, even just to tie it back to the liver, we know that certain fats the liver really loves, like it really supports the liver in detoxifying. You know, we think we have to go raw cleansing, juicing to like help the liver, but actually fat, right, helps the gallbladder do what it does, helps the liver.
Yes.
Like that actually doesn't work very well. So things like olive oil, I mean, extra virgin olive oil is a great one for the liver and for other reasons too, for lowering inflammation and other stuff. Avocado too, the liver loves avocado, and walnuts, right? Mm. So our nut butters.
Yeah. The nut
coconut
butters.
Oil too. Absolutely. Yeah. And then of course the omega-3 fatty acids are going to be helpful when we're talking about hormone balancing, but also for cancer, just prevention, you know, that inflammatory piece is huge when it comes to cancer. So, your whole family of, you know, different fish and ground flax seeds and chia seeds and walnuts and or algae oils if you're vegan. I mean, you know, there's a lot of ways you can get around it. But we have to have, our bodies need fat. And I know that's hard for some people to really wrap their head around. There's a lot of fear there.
Yeah.
But we need it, especially our hormones. And there's been many scenarios too, where the opposite happens, right? Like where people are so low fat that they actually stop producing their sex hormones, because if there isn't enough cholesterol and like saturated fat coming on board, your body just stops. It's like, well, there isn't enough, so we're just not going to make it.
Yes. We see this with eating disorder patients and things like this, right?
Absolutely. And you stop bleeding and cycling and So we definitely need fat for many reasons, like you said.
For many reasons. So guys, please, please, please take that from this conversation. Fat in your food does not equate to fat on your body, you know, it's not that direct, right?
And no,
it's not, it's going to support you. It's going to allow your body to feel and to enter a realm of feeling that support and nourishment so that inflammation can come down. You actually start being able to manage your weight way more appropriately.
Oh yeah.
Right. And I'm straying a little bit because I know the fat piece is such a weight concern for people. So, okay. So this,
I mean, another, let me just say one more thing too. Another big thing that having added fat into your diet does is it nourishes your nervous system, right? It coats the nerves. And so if you're dealing with like anxiety or irritability or stress or depression, adding in those good fats can like make a really big difference in your mood and in just your like stress level, which of course is going to influence your weight too, if that's your goal, right? So
yes. So cooking with these oils, adding them to veggies, adding them to salads, right? Mm-hmm. Like
absolutely.
This is not hard to get. They're not hard to get, right?
Not hard to get.
Okay.
Not at all. All right.
Do the rest of your fourth. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the only other kind of big one in that group. So there's the fats, the crucifers, And then there's phytoestrogens, and there's so much
misunderstanding,
like misinformation about phytoestrogens, because I think it's just because it has the word estrogen in it, you know? And so people are just immediately freaked out. And for many years, doctors were also saying like, don't eat it. But we now know that it is just not the case. So let me explain what's happening here. There are certain plants, particularly like soy, we're going to use that as an example, because that's the one that has the highest amount of phytoestrogens. So there are certain plants with these plant compounds that look like estrogens, that have the shape of estrogen. They can bind to the estrogen receptors, just like the xenoestrogens can. But the difference is they don't stimulate growth. So what they do is they bind and then they block that receptor from being bound by something more potent. So they're actually incredibly protective against cancer.
Yeah. Say this one more time. And will you just do a quick roundup? Estrogen, xenoestrogen, phytoestrogen, because we're throwing words out there.
We're just throwing words out.
We're doing it.
Estrogen. I know. So estrogen is like what your body actually makes, right? It's the actual hormone that you need in certain amounts, but you need for many things.
Right.
Xenoestrogens. Xeno just means like it's not of nature, right? Like it's something foreign. So it's coming, it's a chemical product that's coming into your body and it's mimicking estrogen in your body. It's not mimicking the good parts of estrogen. It's mimicking the bad kind of stimulatory parts of estrogen.
Want to limit as much as possible.
Yes, absolutely. Like there's nothing helpful about fake estrogens. And then there's phyto or plant-based estrogens that are coming from your food that are also binding. They share the same form, but they do not stimulate. So they protect your cells from more stimulatory estrogen. And so there's been so much misunderstanding, like miscommunication about this and this fear, where actually, when you look at the research, cultures that have high levels of soy intake, especially in their youth, have way less breast cancer in their population.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, you guys, I hope you just hear that and sit with that for a minute. That's so huge. Because again, huge. Anytime we can eliminate fear around something,
that's a big deal.
You're winning.
That's right.
Especially unnecessary and unfounded fear.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Now, so I will say there's a caveat with soy, is that, again, based on the research and what makes sense, I think just like intuitively, is that we're going to get that protective benefit from whole soy food, right? Quality. And it needs to be organic, because the problem is, especially in the United States, if it's not organic, it's going to be genetically modified. It's going to be sprayed with Roundup. And we know that glyphosate causes cancer. So even though soy might be having a protective impact, you're going to be adding this chemical into your body, which is not going to be helpful. So there are some caveats, right? Like it's not just any soy. It needs to be organic and it needs to be the whole food form, which is essentially like not in a protein bar, not in a protein powder, not in pills, but like tofu and tempeh and edamame and soy milk. But like actual food forms of soy. Okay.
So the quality here is the absolute most important thing. And I do think that adds to the conversation and the confusion around soy, because I'll tell you from on my side of things, when I do food sensitivity testing, soy comes up a problem more often than dairy, more often than gluten grains. Across the board, like 98% of the time, it's wild. And it's because of what you're saying. It's because the quality.
And because they put it in everything.
And it's in everything. It's in everything.
So you're constantly getting it in your bread or your crackers or just like random
your protein
stuff.
Bars. You're like, random things that. So anyway, I think that though, that gives people organic whole soy. You can go and. I mean, soy milk, you guys, is not any more expensive than almond milk anymore. It's really not. And it's one of the milk alternatives that you actually can easily find in the store that has simple ingredients, soy and water. And if you find an organic version, done. You don't have to think anymore. Yeah. It's really one of the ones for whatever reason. Almond milks, cashew milks, rice milks, things like that have a lot of fillers, a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Soy milk is one of the easier
ones. Soy is more simple. And it's got more protein than all those other milks too, right?
Yes.
It is a good option.
Significantly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so glad that we went over that. Phytoestrogens are in fact protective. Are there other foods that have?
Yeah, there are some other ones. I mean, soy is definitely kind of trumps all of them as far as content, you know, just like concentration in soy. But I would say the next after that, another type of phytoestrogen is lignans, which are found really high in flaxseed and particularly ground flaxseed. So that is actually something usually when I'm working with people going through cancer, it's like, let's bring in organic whole soy. Let's start bringing in daily flaxseed. So that's kind of an easy one that you could add to various things.
Right? Anything, right? And this is ground, right?
Yeah, ground, because it's gonna make it more bioavailable in the gut. Okay, yeah, perfect. It needs to be absorbed. And so that's when it's ground, it's better absorbed. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
And then there are a few others too, but they're not going to be quite as depth. So there's going to be some phytoestrogen in sesame seed or tahini, which would be like another product with sesame seed. Certain beans like mung beans or garbanzo beans or white beans do have some of these compounds. Yams and sweet potatoes have some of this compound.
Oh yes. I've heard there's like a whole
yam thing. Oats, lentils, even apples have some. So it's not like you wouldn't be getting some from the rest of your diet, but if you were trying to be more, I would say intentional, like you wanted it to have this kind of specific effect in your body, I would really try to get some soy in your diet at least flaxseed.
Organic if you don't soy.
Tolerate soy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So this has really, what an intense conversation. what an intense conversation, but what we're leaving people with here is on either side of the coin, you guys. So whether you are somebody who has no concern over cancer in your family, you're not really on your radar, whether it is on your radar and you're kind of in the middle of some sort of process or questioning, you have a family history, or you're on the other side of things.
Yes.
This applies to all of you. And I think our conversation today really focused on how the hormones were impacting different cancers and the prevention of, or the healing process of.
Yes.
But you take that component out, this stuff applies nonetheless, doesn't it?
Sure. Totally. Just to like any woman in general.
Yes.
It's like, when we want to have healthier, more balanced hormones, all of these tips still apply.
Yes. And if you guys have listened to any of the kind of previous conversations that we've had with our conversations around hormones, the same things are getting repeated. Are you? So I'm hoping that you're starting to pick up on some of the trends and realize that this is not a thing that's for those people who do those things. This is for you. This is for you. You need to be doing these things. You deserve to be doing these things. If you're feeling overwhelmed, we hear you. We feel you. You're not alone. It's very normal for you to feel overwhelmed, but that's why these resources are here. So check out the show notes that we have at the end of any of these episodes and go to Dion's website, go to some of these resources. Dion, how can people find you actually? Let's throw that in there.
Well, like I said, I just recently rebranded and I haven't even officially launched it, but by the time this goes live, it will be launched. So
yes. It's so exciting.
I know, probably next week or so. It's super exciting. So I have been the rustic dietitian. That's how you would have found me before. And you still will be able to, you know, it'll direct you to where you need to go. But the new name is Ground and Root. So Ground and Root Cancer Nutrition, which feels just so.
Oh, I love when you say it. I feel like a center. It does.
Grounding and rooting in your nourishment, and your healing.
Amazing.
So the website is groundandroot.com.
Okay.
And then all, and then my social media is going to be like, I have to change my handles, right? Oh. So it's going to be, I know. So my I am on Instagram and Facebook, and they're going to become Ground and Root Nutrition, but it hasn't quite happened yet. It will by the time you
Ground and Root Nutrition or the Rustic Dietitian. So if you get confused or if something doesn't quite line up, right?
You should be able to find me either way. Yes.
But you guys go and check out these resources so that, especially when you're done listening to this and you feel confused and overwhelmed and you're not quite sure where to start, I'm going to ask you to repeat the message here of it's, you don't have to do all of the things, right?
That's right.
These are all things you can do at some point. And is it fair to say too, that there will be certain seasons where you'll be more heavily focused on some things and let go of some other things, and all of that's okay, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm really of the philosophy is that the more you know, the more you have control over what's happening to you, right? And your future. And so it doesn't have to be perfect, but it's hopefully it feels empowering to know that there are things I can do. Like this isn't just set in stone. I don't have to just like watch and wait and hope. I'm not the one who gets cancer. It's like, no, we can actually do things to help reduce that likelihood and get you feeling better in the meantime, right? Because we listed off all those symptoms. Like none of those sounded fun. Nobody wants to have swollen breasts and PMS. Like, no.
Right.
So I think, you know, so we'll feel better and we'll be reducing our chance for cancer. And you just do what you can do. You start with, I would say with what you, whatever stood out to you the most, you know, that's usually where you should start. Like what resonated, what was like, whoa, wow, I didn't know that. Start there and just gradually work through the rest.
That's so good. That's a really nice way to kind of grasp onto the thing that has the highest chance of actually being implemented, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's amazing. Theon, thank you. Thank you for being welcome. With us today. Thank you for learning for yourself all of this really important, empowering, powerful information. And then kind of like taking the call to share it with us, because it is really, it is the missing link. It's the missing link between conventional approaches, which are good and appropriate and definitely have a place, right?
They have their role for sure.
They do. But I do think that a lot of people experience this, you no longer have control. You have to do what I say or else. Mm-hmm. Type of message, whether directly being said or indirectly.
Oh, for sure.
And to be able to sort of slice through that cycle and tell people, actually, here's a whole bunch of shit you can do on your own. That's incredibly impactful now and for the long run. It doesn't get any better than that for me. It just doesn't. So ladies, good. I hope this lands in a really beautiful grounding way for you. Overwhelm and all, right? Come as you are to this conversation.
Exactly.
And check out the resources, get yourself support. If some of the testing sounded important to you, find a person that's gonna support you doing that. Yeah. And I think too, like if you're not feeling supported in whatever the current system or support system is looking like for you, maybe let this be a sign for you to move on or to search further, right? That's got to be a huge piece of what goes into this, right? For recovery particularly.
For sure. And things come into our life when we need them the most. So, you know, I think that, isn't that true? Like it's true for me.
I felt that so much. Yes.
So I think like, if you're hearing this, there's a reason you're hearing this. Yeah. If you've stayed till the end, there's a reason. Right. And you want to, I think like it's, you really need to process that and take some action, whatever that looks like for you.
You couldn't have said it any better. Things happen for a certain reason at a certain time. And for those of you hearing it, whenever this is, welcome. And you're welcome. Like we're excited to help you heal, right? Like I think that's the gift.
Absolutely.
That's the gift. Absolutely. It is. Yeah. Thank you, Theon, so much.
You're welcome.
And you guys, the number of technical difficulties that this episode holds, I'm so glad you're not seeing
this.
We
won't talk about it.
Oh my God. It's so ridiculous. But thank you for being patient and sitting through all of that to bring us this information. We love you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see you soon. Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Hey, all, thank you so much for listening and being here with us. It really means the world to us. And we want to let you know that we really love to hear from you and we want to know what you're more and more curious about. So if you are having a particular experience and you'd love for us to track down an expert to try to teach everybody more about that, let us know. Or on the other hand, if you have had an amazing experience with a practitioner who you think would be really great for our show, let us know. We would love to try to bring them on and spread the good news. Thank you so much. Let us know. We're happy to hear from you.